Well, we have 9 more holes to go, so how about you two fellas follow me to the 10th tee?
On to the back 9, hour number 2 of Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper, son of Hall of Famer Billy Casper.
2 players down the middle on the 10th hole.
Here's Brian and Bob.
And we have to add in their 1970 Masters champion, Billy Casper, this time of year, because it is Masters exciting right now. You must just sometimes, when you start seeing all this Masters stuff come up, Bob, just be like, shake your head sometimes and be like, I can't believe my dad actually went out and won that thing.
You know, this week I was looking at stuff that the Masters was posting on social media and everything, and then I was watching on the Golf Channel, they were 2015. It was the 2015 Masters and Jordan Spieth winning. And then after they're showing the different guys, you know, people putting jackets on, and there was George Archer and my dad and putting the jacket on him. And then my dad standing there with the jacket on. And I just look at that and I go, man, that is so cool. And I have been so fortunate in my life that I had a dad that won 51 times and won 3 major championships, including the Masters. And I went over and talked with my mom this week and I just pinched myself. It's really, really cool.
It's part of you, right? I mean,
yeah.
It's part of you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Super cool. And you've kind of adopted me in over the years to be a part of, which has been really something to experience. But
your first trip there was amazing.
Yeah. You might say that. What could you package that up and sell it for, Bob? That would be an interesting question. You want my first Masters experience? What would you be willing to pay for it?
I mean, that's right.
It, you know what the answer is? Priceless. It's priceless.
Yeah, right. We couldn't replicate that now because my dad's not there anymore.
Well, pretty much everybody that was involved in that is not there anymore,
yeah,
sadly.
That's true.
Sam Snead.
That's true.
Arnold Palmer.
Arnold.
Yeah. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
We'll share that story. Well, we can. If you've been listening, you've probably heard it, but it was ridiculous. But hey, coming up, we're going to preview the Augusta National Women's Amateur. There's some great storylines. It's remarkable to me that you have a player in Mega Gon who has played in 4 drive, chip, and putt finals and is now about to tee it up in her 4th Augusta National Women's Amateur. I mean, that's just
unbelievable.
What a cool experience for that young lady to have grown up around Augusta. Augusta's a part of her as well.
Yes.
And that's what's the great thing. When you go back there, you feel like Augusta's a part of you. They do it right. It's a celebration of the game. And it's unreal. We'll talk about it all coming up next right here on Real Golf Radio.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Welcome back to Real Golf Radio, brought to you in part by Black Desert Resort in St. George, Utah. Check out blackdesertresort.com. The Tom Weiskopf Championship Design Golf Course is unreal. You can book tee times at blackdesertresort.com. Find out about exclusive real estate opportunities, the resort opening this summer, the upcoming PGA Tour event, the LPGA Tour event coming in May of 25, and all that goes on with this incredible resort in Southern Utah. Go to blackdesertresort.com. And we appreciate you joining us here on the show. We said that we're going to talk a little bit about the Augusta National Women's Amateur. We're going to get into our preview mm-hmm. for the Masters as well. Lots to talk about there. I got our sheet up from the talking points from a year ago. And I think it's always mm-hmm. fun to kind of look back and say, what were we talking about a year ago going into the Masters? And how is it similar or different than going into this year? So we'll talk about that coming up. But let's go this. The Augusta National Women's Amateur, they play 2 rounds at Champions Retreat.
Correct.
They're in Augusta. And then that's during the week. And then they take Friday, and everyone who is qualified gets a chance to play a practice round at Augusta National.
Which is like
so cool.
If you get into the tournament, you know, it's one thing to have a chance to win, but you play 2 rounds, and even if you don't make it to the last, 30 players or whatever, you still get to play Augusta.
Yeah.
And how many people outside of playing in, you know, with a member or playing in the Masters or whatever, get a chance to play at Augusta? These ladies, it is so awesome and so cool for them to be a part of this event.
So Wednesday and Thursday, April 3rd and 4th are the two rounds at Champions Retreat. And then Friday, it's a closed practice at the National, followed by the final round there at Augusta National. So that's kind of the schedule. Now, here's what's interesting, Bob, is in looking at Augusta National, it's the anwagolf.com is the website if you want to check it out, anwagolf.com. And Haley Hernandez wrote an article about the amount of top 23 finishers that are ready to give it another go this year. So there are 43 returning players and a notable 37 competitors returning from last year's event. That's pretty remarkable.
Wow.
So seven of the top 10 players from last year's championship is returning. Seven of the top 10. I mean, think about the impact that this is having on the women's game. And some of these players perhaps are prolonging their turning professional in order to stay as an amateur and continue to participate in a great championship like the ANWA.
You know, what's really cool about this, and I agree with what you just said, Brian, when this was announced in 2018, the chairman, Fred Ridley, during his press conference, he said, "The event is established to inspire greater interest and participation in the women's game by creating a new and exciting and rewarding path for these players to fulfill their dreams." And I think that's exactly what this is doing. Case in point, Rose Zhang last year wins in a two-hole playoff, and she turns around and wins her first event on the LPGA Tour. And she's played on the LPGA Tour. She's played in the Solheim Cup now last year. She's going to probably get a chance to play in it again this year. But now she's taken a little bit of a hiatus from the LPGA Tour so she can finish up her college education. And then she will be back out there and just clipping along, playing in majors and all that kind of thing throughout the remainder of this year. That's what I really think is cool about this event, is it helps the women's game to fulfill their dreams in the game of golf.
Sweden's Andrea Lingnell, if I said that right, is the top finisher to return after finishing third last year in her debut in 2023. Here's a couple other ones. This is tough for me. This player from Spain, Cayetana Fernandez Garcia Poggio. There you go. Bam.
There you go. Good job, Brian.
Thank you. She finished in her first start, she finished fourth at 17 years old.
Wow.
She had five birdies in her final round at Augusta National, birdieing number 7, 9, 15, 17, and 18.
Wow.
How you doing?
Yeah.
First of all, if you were to pick out, if I said, hey, she got five birdies at Augusta, which holes are you going to pick out? You probably would have picked 15. Are you picking 7, 9?
No.
17 and 18?
No.
Are you kidding me? Wow.
No.
That's impressive.
And then you think about Anna Davis winning.
Yeah.
The year before in 2022. Mm-hmm. Okay. Lefty. She goes out and she wins the golf tournament and she hadn't even gone to college yet.
Single-handedly brought back the bucket hat.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I listened to an interview with her this week on the Golf Channel. And she said, well, I thought it was going to be a little bit warm that day, so I figured I just wanted to cover up a little bit more, so I put the bucket hat on. And that was it. And it became a trend.
Oh, it was big. They sold out in a second.
Oh, it was big.
I mentioned Mega Gaughan, one of seven players making her fourth start at the championship. She's a sophomore at Stanford, has four top 10 finishes and a win this season. Gaughan is also a four-time, as I mentioned in the last segment, four-time drive, chip, and putt national finalist at Augusta National. She played in 15, 17, 18, and 19. And now here she is playing in her fourth Augusta National Women's Amateur. It's so cool. It's so cool that what's going on with this. And so we'll be talking about that. We will be there at Augusta National next Saturday. Be sure to follow us at Real Golf on X. We'll be bringing you some insights. We'll get out on the golf course and watch these ladies. I'll tell you what I enjoy watching is they hit it a little bit more like I hit it. So,
right.
And I mean that with all due respect. I mean, as far as distance wise, right? I can't, the guys, the PGA Tour guys hit it so far. I can't even relate to how far they hit it, right?
Yeah.
And these ladies hit it far too, but more reasonable to what maybe I would. So I can kind of see how they go around the golf course a little differently than the tour guys go around the golf course. And so it's a great perspective, and I love watching it. So I'm excited to be out there next Saturday watching that one. So that'd be good stuff. I can't relate to making 5 birdies in a championship setting at Augusta National. I can tell you that. I cannot relate to that. That is... I didn't make one. I've only played it once. I didn't make one birdie. Let's just put it that way.
Oh,
I was pretty happy to par the last 3 holes. That was my claim to fame. I parred the last 3
holes.
Let's go.
There you go.
That's now. But would you birdie the last 5 when you played it the first time you threw out?
I think I birdied, 13, 14, 16, 17, and 18. Yeah. Oh,
okay. All right. Is that
5 out of last 6.
Is that all?
That's it.
That's unreal. Hey, Augusta National last year, as we're going into the Masters, here's what we were talking about. Here's my bullet points. Distance and lengthening of 13. That was a big deal last year.
Yeah.
The new par 3 course.
Now we've got a shift of number 2 to the left and a little bit longer.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's going to be quite as dramatic as, but you know what? Sometimes subtle changes have bigger impacts than you think.
Yeah.
The new par 3 course, which was cool. It opened things up. Sight lines, grandstands, all kinds of cool stuff there. 18 live players. That was a bullet point.
Right.
18 live players. How did the Masters rank in the majors? And when I pulled that up and looked at it, I'm like, why is that even on there? But do you remember what Gary Player said last year?
Yeah. Open championship.
Yeah. He said it was, you can't have an exhibition, or he called it like an exhibition or invitational, whatever he called it, right?
An invitational is not a true championship.
Right. I'm like, really, Gary? Really?
Come on.
Someone needed some press clippings. What are we doing here?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, this is the 50th anniversary of his Masters win in 1974. One of the things, as a golf fan, you should know is who won the Masters the year you were born.
Okay.
And for me, 1974, so I know that Gary Player won the Masters in 1974. I just turned 50. I know it's the 50th anniversary. Bobby, you were born in 1960. I know who won in 1960. That's an easy one. You know? You know.
Chuck Nicklaus.
I was going to say Arnold Palmer. I think
it's probably Arnold Palmer.
I think it was Arnold Palmer in 1960. Yeah. I can go back and look. Could be wrong.
You know what? I'm going to go back and look
right
now
while you're looking at it. But I'm going with Arnold Palmer, final answer.
Okay, fine.
And I don't even have no notes in front of me. That's just when I hear 1960, I'm thinking Palmer. Tell me I'm wrong.
Okay, list of Masters champions.
While you're pulling that up, while you're pulling that up. The other thing we had was defending champion Scottie Scheffler, and then the favorites. Here was our list of favorites. Scheffler, Rory, Spieth, Rahm, Zalatoris, who had to withdraw, Morikawa, Cam Smith, Tony Finau, and Patrick Cantlay. Those were the list of favorites that we had going into the week. And, of course, of that list, John Rahm went on to win. So, hey, if you give us enough, if we can bet a conglomerate of players, we might do okay.
Conglomerate of the top 10 in the world.
Yeah, can we exactly? Can we have what's the bet on one of those? Oh, I'm really good at picking.
And
this.
Ding, 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 ding. Yeah. Second win at Augusta. Arnold Palmer.
Okay, 1960.
There you go.
Well, I'm so psyched. Let's go. Masters week. It's so close. Hey, when we come back, we are going to welcome in America's favorite caddy. As we said, he did a show last week. He called it his favorite about the caddy player relationship. If you heard it, even if you heard it last week, it's worth another listen. That's next right here on Real Golf Radio.
You're listening to Real Golf Radio. Talking golf with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
One day you'll get it.
Here's Brian and Bob.
All right, welcome back to Real Golf Radio. Brian and Bob with you. Thanks for joining us. And we're continuing now with America's favorite caddy. We've been talking about Scottie Scheffler and Ted Scott. And so, yeah, I love that you said that, you know, because you're right. Scottie says, Teddy kept me in a good headspace out there. And it's so interesting. You know, I think there's players that will acknowledge the caddy and his role in their success. And then there's players that refuse to do that because they feel like it's all on them. How much does that say about the player as much as it does about the caddy in that relationship?
I think different people have different needs. You could take that question immediately and say, well, some players aren't giving the guys the credit they deserve, or they're giving them too much, you know, whatever. Look, your job as a caddy is to figure out how to figure out how to have your player play his best golf. It's that simple. At least that's what I think the job is. Another guy I'd point out just from observing and never having actually physically caddied alongside him, Greller and Spieth are another team that you look at it and say, you know, who else could handle Spieth like Greller does? Those guys are so good together. Sometimes you just need to totally stay out of someone's way. I remember when Bambi went to work for Nicklaus one time, he basically said, just give me the yardage. I got this. Leave me alone.
Right.
I'm Jack Nicklaus. I got it all. I don't need any help. And there's guys like that. Like, I remember Retief. I think Retief's good friend was caddying for him. He may still be. I've been out there for a while with him. But he basically told the guy, hey, listen, I'm going to take the book. I'm going to do everything. Just carry the clubs and kind of like be my friend. Right. So different people need different things. And so as a caddy, you've got to pay attention to that. I've seen a number of caddies have kind of an ego. And I think they get a little, we call it over caddying. They get a little too into the game and maybe overdo it with their player a bit. Some people are really good at figuring out how to deal with a player's mentality. And look, some people fit with some people. Some people don't fit with other people. You could, you know, Teddy might not work well. There's a player I won't name who's a really negative person, right? Not in a kind of a bad way, but it's just the way he is. And he doesn't respond well to the cheerleading caddies. And you have that person and everybody's telling him, thinking like, oh, you got to think more positive. You got to do well. Why? Who made that rule? Right. It just so happens that this guy's a unique individual. And anyway, the guy who's had the most success caddying with him, the first day's caddying, the guy hits a shot over the green and hits the cart path. And he says to this guy, this caddy says, where do you think that went? And he goes, well, with your luck, probably out of bounds. And the guy just smiled. He loved it. He loved hearing that from his caddy. Now, who would think that's the right thing to say, yeah, right? But it's the right thing for this guy, right? And these two guys have been like the best one, another great caddy player combo. But, you know, really, who would think that's the good thing to do? But it just is for this particular player. So caddying's, they say golf's 95% mental, right? Caddying's like 195% mental. Or psychological, let's say.
Really interesting discussion. I love that. That's good stuff. Caddy joining us here on Real Golf Radio. Hey, I wanted to take a moment and talk a little bit about yardage books again, because that's after you carried the bag for those 30 years, you have been making yardage books for some time, and you just finished the Black Desert book, and I had a chance to play around with it for the first time yesterday. And the greens book that's incorporated, the pick book that shows the lines, all the information that's there, I've played this golf course 20 times, let's call it. So it's not like I don't know how to get around it, but there's some information in there that just gives you a check. Maybe just talk a little bit about when players are sitting there and they're consulting their yardage book, what information is it that they're studying? Let's say on an approach shot, you got some carry distance, you've got where you want to land the ball. I think so many of us think, how far is the pin? Versus what, maybe talk us through what's all going into a shot before, rather than just a laser yardage to a flag.
So here's probably what happened to you. Since you've played there a number of times, it's not like you don't know exactly where to hit it off of every tee. You know, I can only go this so far left, et cetera. And then you an approach shot into the green. Well, you laser the pin, you know your distance. When you start pulling the book, and I think this is why guys at the top level kind of get addicted to the process, right? If I tell you you're 132 and the pin's 8 over the right and the green's kind of soft, as a good top level player, right, you don't really need that 8 cover, and you just need the 132 because you're going to fly it there. You're going to fly it past the hole a little bit because the green's soft. However, once the routine as a tour caddy, I'm going to say, okay, you got 120 front and 12, 132, it's 8 over the right. And so it's 24-32 at over the right, and it's 3 uphill. So I've just done a lot more stuff than just telling you it's 132 and it's a little uphill. And I think maybe mentally, it just kind of starts locking you into certain precise targets, right? And a lot of people respond really well to precise targeting. What we're doing there is we're getting your mind off anything but your target, right? Mm. And you hear a lot of players say they play their best when they're really precisely focused on their target and not their golf swing, right? So it's just that whole process there, if you think about it. And another thing, too, is under pressure. A lot of people do a lot better under pressure when they're process-oriented and not result-oriented. Mm-hmm. So I'm not thinking about, I've got to hit this close. I'm thinking about, it's 24 front, it's 8 over the cover, da-da-da-da-da. You're going through a process of hitting a shot, and that kind of releases you from result focus to process focus. A lot of people talk about that. They just play better under pressure when they're process focused. Do this. Like, I had a buddy he was a really good kicker in college. I mean, he went to the NFL for tryouts and actually got beaten out by Adam Vinatieri. So maybe he should have kept it. But
yeah.
Anyway, I asked him, I said, man, how much pressure does it put on you when they call a timeout? And he goes, there just isn't pressure kicking. I said, excuse me, there's no pressure. Now, he's got a little different mind than a lot of people, but he said, no, he goes, you get up there, you take your steps, you know, you measure the ball, you take those two steps to the left. Very shortly after that, the ball snapped. He goes, you don't have time to really feel pressure because you're just going count two to the left. Here comes the ball. Boom. I go. See, it's all process. He's not thinking, I got to make this kick. He's thinking, I'm backing off. I'm taking my two steps left. I'm setting my feet. Here we go. Boom. And it just happens. So I think when you get that book in your hand, even though you've played the course many times, you're kind of doing process now stuff and target, precise target stuff. And maybe that just helps zone you in a little more. And it lets your body and the golf swing happen, right? Instead of making it like, okay, I'm going to swing a little harder at this one. I'm going to, you know, post my left leg a little more coming through on this one. And yeah, I remember talking to Nick Price once about targeting. And I said, what do you aim at? And he says, you know what I do a lot? He goes, on tee shots especially, he goes, I aim at a leaf on a tree. You know anybody who aims at a leaf on a tree?
How many people can see the leaf?
Well, that's my, I never really asked, like, you can see a leaf from like 380 yards away, but it was just cool to hear how precise he was targeting. Right. And so, yeah, I'm trying to make the ball fly right at that leaf on that left edge of that tree. I'm like, wow. Okay. That's pretty cool. Now look, I can tell you too, there's tour pros who, you asked Lauren Roberts about putting, where do you aim? And he goes, oh, I kind of blur my vision and just kind of paint it down a line over here, you know, corridor. So there's the boom. There's your devil's advocate, complete opposite idea. But you don't hear a lot of that. It's usually process oriented and precise focus is. I mean, can a golf pro really hit it 132 instead of 133? Well, no, but it's like Johnny Miller when he was going to half yards with Andy Martinez. What was he doing there, really? Because he probably wasn't even with 3 or 4 yards of the actual yardage because they didn't have precise measurements back then. And the pin sheet wasn't going to be right and all that kind of yada, yada, yada. So what was Johnny Miller doing? Well, he was just internalizing this incredible precision in his brain and, you know, kind of making himself think, I'm this good and I'm that precise and look at the results.
I am drinking this up. I am drunk right now. I am just like loving every second of everything you're saying. And
Cabby has pontificated today.
I mean, like if you're a golf geek, like if you like golf at all, like what the caddy just said there in the last 5 minutes, just record it and play it over and over and over in your mind. That was gold. That was gold, Jerry. That was gold. Caddy, we're out of time, but that was so good. Thanks so much for sharing that. Man, good question, Bob, to get that one started. And, man, that was good stuff. Let's do it again.
What you guys just did, I haven't caddied for several years. And you just took me on a journey back to what happened, you know, what was it like caddying on the tour? And it's like I hadn't thought about this for a long time. But one thing I think I really enjoyed about it was you really get locked in, right? You get locked in. I remember Kisner talking about there, asking him about the playoff at the Players, and he was walking from here to there and doing this and that. And he said, you know, I didn't really see the people. I wasn't aware of the crowd. I was just so locked in to where I was. And that's what happens, even when you're caddying. You kind of get locked in, and it's a really, like, I'm getting goosebumps. It's a really cool thing to do, is to get into kind of that locked in mode. It's neat. I guess that's the zone, right? Maybe you can even get in the zone a little bit when you're caddying, like you do when you're playing a sport. But, no, it's kind of like, I'm like, yeah, that's one thing I liked about it so much, was that kind of, it's fun to do that, to get into those. That feel.
Well, thanks anyway. For giving us some of that insight. That is awesome. There you go. You heard it right there. America's favorite caddy laying it out for you right here on Real Golf Radio. Stay tuned. More of the show coming up next.
Now, back to Real Golf Radio with Brian Taylor and Bob Casper.
Hey, hope you enjoyed that caddy edition. I mean, that is some really, really good stuff there about the mental aspect and how a caddy can help prepare his player and knowing what to say and do and that whole relationship. Man, that's good stuff. As we said, the caddy said that was his favorite segment that he's ever done, and he got goosebumps the whole nine yards. So hopefully you enjoyed that as much if you heard it for the second time or the first time. That's really, 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 really good stuff there by the caddy. The game, there's so much to the game, right? And
yeah,
look, Bob, how many times have you gone out and you've just been in a mood or a vibe or a mindset, and the game everything was just happening. It was easy.
Yeah.
You could see the shots, you hit the shots. It's not even necessarily that you're in a competition or winning a tournament, but just if you're just out playing. And then there's other times you stand up there and your mind couldn't be further from what you're doing. And you same guy can be relegated to 10 shots higher score. Mm-hmm. Than mm-hmm. he was in a different kind of a mind frame. You know what I mean? Like, it's really such a crazy, what a weird game that is, right?
Yeah, it is. You know, it's the fun thing is, you know, having caddied out there, caddied for my dad and caddied for Keith Clearwater on tour. It's just, you know, you get, like you said, in that mindset where you're both clicking together, and then there's times when you're not, and it can be further from the truth, but you're always trying to mesh. You're always trying to help your player play to the best of their ability. And, you know, whatever that is, whatever the things that you say to them, you know, sometimes you just want to shut up and not say a word, you know, especially, you know, when the negativity is going so bad one direction, but then you've got to be able to step in and be able to maybe shock them out of that mindset and see if you can help them to right the ship and go the correct direction. So it's really, really cool. It's fun. It's why a guy like Fluff Cowan has been a caddy all his life.
That's amazing.
Because, you know, when he's in his 70s now, and it's because these guys love it. These guys like it. Of course, they're making a bunch of money caddying for their players and that kind of thing. But it's being in the thrill of contention and watching your player compete at his highest level. I can remember one time I was caddying for Keith Clearwater and he was playing at Doral, and we're in the mix of stuff coming down the stretch and everything. And you know, we were on the 17th hole and the pin's in this little narrow neck and it's right in the middle of this neck. And, you know, we've got 190 yards or something like that. And he hit the most pure 5-iron I've ever seen in my life. And I said, and I was thinking, you know, and my aspirations were to play professional golf. I'm in the wrong business because there's no way I could hit that shot under this type of pressure, because I was already feeling the pressure. I was feeling the nerves and the stuff in my gut and that kind of thing. But to watch those guys perform and to watch them play, it's really, really cool.
So you've always told me about how your dad doesn't like any additional information. When I got that one time I got a chance to caddy for him, it was not a good start, Bob. It was not a good start. We started on the back because of a rain delay. And I think we went triple to start. So we get to 12 and your dad's like mumbling under his breath, I shouldn't be out here, you know, and he hadn't played in the Masters for a while.
Yeah.
And I felt like
he was, and the reason he was playing that year is because he had grandchildren there, and his oldest grandchild, my sister's son, said to him, Papa, we would really love to see you play in the Masters. We've never had that opportunity. So he decided to play.
He did. And the tragedy of it all is that I was the one on the bag instead of his oldest grandson or something that could have been enjoying that experience. But I'm eternally grateful. It was the most incredible thing ever. But I said to him as we got there on 12th
green.
Yeah. As we're walking, he hit a shot just left of the 12th green. He pulled it and it got over Ray's Creek and he's just off the green, but he's like pin high, but all the way left, pins over, you know, close to there to the right. Mm-hmm. And as we're walking over there, about to go over the bridge, he's just kind of like struggling. And I just said, hey, look, he's like, I shouldn't be here. And I said, you should be here. I said, you're a Masters champion. Everybody loves you here. And I just said to him, again, I've never done this, so I don't have no idea, but I just said, go hit that little skipper shot you like to hit and let's make par and move on. And that's all I said. He never said anything back. But you know what? He freaking hit that skipper shot to about 3 feet and made it for par, and we went on.
Yeah.
And he never said anything. I never said anything. He never said anything. We just went.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I don't know. I just felt like I just went with my instincts on that. I'm like, I felt like I should have said something, and maybe it was good. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe he appreciated it. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. But I didn't ask him. Like, hey, was that good? You want me to say something else? Didn't say that.
But that's something you'll remember for the rest of your life.
Yeah. The next thing I remember him saying was, hey, you got to be ready with those golf balls on 16. That's the lesson.
That was on 16. When he's hitting them in a little bucket up there, just left of the green in the water.
I've never seen anything like it. You could have put a napkin over it. He hit five balls in there. They could have put a napkin over the spot where it's unreal.
Yep. Yeah.
Nevertheless, that's I'll tell you, I've never felt more out of my element ever though in my whole life than I was on that 16th.
It's the adrenaline and the surge of adrenaline and everything that goes along with that, as well as being in contention with your player when they're clicking on all cylinders. It's amazing, and I get chills just thinking about it right now.
Yeah.
And that's what the caddy was talking about. I mean, that's what you do it for, you know. Like I said, you get paid great, you know. I just saw this last week, Ted Scott in the two tournaments so far this year, or in the tournaments that he's caddied for Scottie Scheffler this year. Just the last two wins. Yeah. $850,000 if you're going off of, if you're basing it off of 10%.
Yeah.
$850,000 is what he made, because Scottie Scheffler made $8,500,000. Ted Scott has already won or earned more than Rory McIlroy has won this year so far.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the stat, was that Ted Scott that is was a the caddy stat. For Scheffler has earned more money than Rory as a player so far this season.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. You know, it's phenomenal. It's what you get paid if you have the opportunity to do it and you're that good to be out there with one of these really good players. But it's a lot more than that, too.
And by the way, follow Ted Scott on his social, and he addresses that. He said, since everyone wants to talk about my finances, I'll go ahead and talk about my finances. And he delivered a really nice Easter themed sermon around that very thing, which is kind of cool. If you're interested, look up Ted on social media. It was kind of cool.
Well, and he probably said something to the effect of where much is given, much is expected. So
that's right.
Kind of cool stuff.
Yep. That's right.
And Scotty's the same way. Scotty's the same way. He, you know, when I'm at home, I'm just Scotty Scheffler. I have this ability and everything that plays out in the public view, but that's not what I'm about. And I think that's really, really cool about those guys.
It is really cool, actually.
Yep.
So
yeah,
we'll see. Scotty's trying to chase down Tony Finau. And as we're speaking right now, just a couple shots behind with five holes to play in his second round. So we'll see where it ends up. But Scotty's looking for three in a row. Incidentally, on the LPGA Tour, Nelly Korda is looking for three in a row in her own right, as the both world number ones in the ladies' game and the men's game have won in their last two starts and are both in position to win for a third consecutive time in their current tournament this week. So that's some pretty cool golf stories to look forward to for sure. So I mentioned, Bob, that we had looked back at last year's list of bullet points. Next week, we'll do our Masters preview show.
Right.
Last year, we talked about the favorites. Scheffler, Rory, Spieth, Rahm, Zalatoris, who ended up not playing, Morikawa, Cam Smith, Tony Finau, and Patrick Cantlay. Those were the names that we rattled off. Is there any name that you would not include this year from last year's list of favorites?
I don't know. It'd be hard. Just because simply from the standpoint of the LIV players, which I don't think there's a lot of people out there that are really focused on LIV golf and their tournaments and that kind of thing, just don't know how they're playing and what their courses are like, how they're set up, all that kind of thing. So it's hard for me to put any one of those guys in there because I don't know what they're doing or how they're playing or anything like that. So, but we've seen that there's a lot of those guys that are exempt to play at Augusta. And, you know, they were right in the mix of things, everything last year. Brooks Koepka finished second. Phil Mickelson shot 65 in the final round, finished second. So, you know, they're still professional golfers. They're still the guys that we have seen on the PGA Tour and top players in the world. But yet we don't know how they're playing because we don't keep up with their play.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. That's totally fair.
What's
it going to take for Rory to finally break through and get that green jacket and complete the career Grand Slam? That's going to be one of the big storylines, as it has been since he's had that opportunity.
Yeah, I think he needs to get off to a really good start. In past years, he's been a couple of over par. He missed the cut last year when he was definitely the odds-on favorite going into the week. Yeah, I think he needs to get off to a good start. He needs to shoot in the 60s, and he doesn't need to rely on backdooring it in the final round. He needs to get off to a good start and make a presence right from the beginning.
Last year at the Masters, he missed the cut. He went 72-77. I don't think anybody saw that coming. He acted like in his pre-tournament press conference, it was the most confident and relaxed that I remember seeing him leading into the Masters. Because he does have a lot of pressure on him because of the fact that that's the chance to complete the career Grand Slam. After missing the cut at the Masters, he would go on to tie for seventh at the PGA, was runner-up at the U.S. Open, and tied for sixth at the Open Championship. So pretty dang good, right? By the way, the previous majors prior to that, he finished third at the Open, tied for fifth at the U.S. Open, eighth at the PGA, and runner-up at the Masters. So if you look at that string of majors that he's had in the last 2 years, that's seven top tens. Seven out of eight top tens with a missed cut.
An anomaly right there in the middle.
And actually top eights, if you want to, if you really want to dial it down. And two of them were runner-up finishes.
Well, he's proven that he can play well at Augusta. I think it's just that he gets off to a really tough start. And when he does get off to a really good start, like he did the first time he played it, you know, had a four or five shot lead going to the back nine and let it go. And that was maturity. That was maturity level when he was just a young kid. He needs to get off to start where he is in the mix going to the back nine on Sunday. And if he has that opportunity with his game, the way he hits, drives the ball, his iron shots, how many times he's been around Augusta National and what he knows about that golf course, I think he's going to have a really good chance.
And yet,
and that's the guy that I've chosen for this year.
And yet so many guys are going to point out that Rory's missed the cut at the Masters two of the last 3 years. Now, the other year was a runner-up finish, right, in 2022. Yep. But you can't deny the fact that in 21 and 23, he missed the cut. Now, outside of those two missed cuts, if you want to go, you got the runner-up in 22, you got the tie for 5th in 20, tied for 21st in 19, tied for 5th in 18, tie 7th, tie 10th, 4th, tie 8th. I mean, the guy has put himself into contention and in position, but you're right. It's important that, I mean, his first round, I'm trying to think, he shot 65 in 2011. That was the year he nearly won it. He shot 80 in the final round to lose it that year. But that, only one other time has he shot in the 60s, and that was in 2018. He tied for 5th, shot 69 in that opening round. So to your point about getting off to a good start, put yourself in position so you don't have to, to come back and shoot a 65 on Saturday like you did in 2018 or something like that. So, yeah, right. Really interesting. So, all right, good stuff. Hey, it's been fun. Next week's Masters Preview Edition is going to be a good time. I hope you'll tune in for that one. The Augusta National Women's Amateur takes place next week. Bob and I will be at Augusta National for the final round coming up next week and for the finals of the Drive, Chip, and Putt Championship. We're excited about that. Thanks to Ballingy. Thanks to the caddy as well. Thanks to you for tuning in. For Dave Glauser and Bob Casper, I'm Brian Taylor. Enjoy this week. We'll see you next week from Augusta right here on Real Golf Radio.